This is a production of Cornell University.
after that. The provost collects all these the assembly votes, and you can tack on any old resolution you want, but basically the provost will make the decision. I should say here that with respect to employees, the what's called the modified current calendar has some attractive features, given our experience in talking with you over the last year. One is that we're restoring orientation to a full 5 days, which is the way it was before. This means a more considered start to the semester. We don't have to start breathless, which is the way it is now. And the in-between semester, then at the end of the year, we're actually restoring what were called senior days or whatever. So there's a much more time to flip the dorms. It's not just a 1.5-day thing. So I think that's attractive. The in-between, the December-January break gets shrunk by just a few days. That shouldn't change any of the things that go on, such as academic actions, getting grades and all that sort of business. So I suspect that what we call the modified current calendar will be attractive to you. But, of course, we're neutral. The other calendar moves graduation 2 weeks, and that's has a lot of ramifications. But anyway, that's on there as well. So I'm available at all times to talk about this, and their emails and ways to, you can post comments on the web of all that kind of stuff. So it'd be good to hear back from you. The report is final in, we're always up for last minute insights or whatever that can change things. Don't expect anything dramatic, but it's still 2 weeks here before the final thing is then voted on.
Question, Charlie, at this point? Great, we will.
Go ahead. A super quick question. The whole idea of having two spring breaks originated because there was 1 year when there was a lot of summer time. And I'm wondering, that hasn't been something I've heard talked about much.
You talked about it huge. A lot of people think it should be just gotten rid of. But now, the once you give something like that away, it's hard to take it away. The students are very adamant about that. Mm-hmm. And so we went around a lot about that. But the position of it has been changed, mm-hmm. so it comes at a more opportune time in the semester. The main value for it, to me, actually, is it permits you to stall a bit. Because if you didn't have that in there, you'd have trouble. We couldn't do this expanded senior day thing at the end. So it has sort of a filler kind of a role. We're the only, except for Brown, amongst our peers, we're the only university with a two-break semester. Yale has a single two-week break. So we're extremists in that regard.
So some smaller colleges.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, for sure.
Okay, so we'll be following up on this, I guess, very, very quickly. And this survey is already going out. The survey link that's in here.
Oh, there's no. This round, we've done. We got 4,000 replies to our last survey. We got like 1,000 in the fall. This is just. It's now down to the assemblies. Okay, it's up to you to talk to your constituents. We're looking, for the assemblymen to vote. Sort of before the middle of May.
Okay. That's it. Well. Guess that'll be our topic at our next meeting then. Have fun. All right. Laura, you had an announcement about retirement.
I just think last December I replaced Hazel Hall as the Employee Assembly Representative to the Retirement Plan Oversight Committee, which is headed by Eric George Offerman. And just thought we met again finally on Friday. It's the last meeting that's been canceled because of a big snowstorm. There are a couple of things that might be of potential interest. I thought I'd just, present to you all. I am your representative on that committee. The first thing is that there have been some federal rules about fiduciary impact and rule changes pertaining to giving advice. I don't know how many of us have ever met with Fidelity or a TIAA representative to talk about your retirement plans, but in the past, they would give guidance. I'm sure many of us felt that it was advice, but now they will actually be giving advice, which is supposed to prioritize the employee's well-being. So there is a difference. I don't think on the ground it will feel that different to most of us, but they are supposed to not recommend one of their own funds, but another fund from a competitor that is out in the market. so that might have some impact. The only other really big thing is that the choices in the Tier 3 retirement plan are going to be reduced. The goal is to reduce them to about 50 choices. Currently, there are over 250 choices of different funds in that particular asset category. So I think 50 seems, to me as a non-finance person, it seems like there's ample choice there. And I think the goal of the Retirement Plan Oversight Committee is to be able to keep better tabs on all of these in terms of their performance. One of the tasks of the committee is to recommend seriously underperforming funds for termination so that Cornell staff are not putting their retirement allocations into funds that are not, you know, on a par with other similar funds.
Questions for Laura about this? And for a committee that most people are probably not that interested in, boy, there's a lot that goes on there. I said in two meetings, it's like, whoa, not the committee for me. But Oh, go ahead, Karen.
Sorry. I was just wondering, if funds get removed and the staff member had already invested in them, what happens?
It depends on the nature of the removal. Some funds, the costs go up, and they allow the employee to keep their money in that fund. Sometimes the fund, for example, there's one BlackRock fund that was a bond fund that is now going to be not a bond fund. So anybody who has holdings in that as a long-term bond fund will be rolled over into the next closest fund. So it all depends. I mean, I know that's a wishy-washy answer, but
okay.
I'm a little fuzzy on exactly what the criteria would be, but in the meetings they actually go over that for each and every fund that's considered.
I see. Do affected staff members get notifications on that, or?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
My understanding is that everybody should be notified.
Great. Thank you.
Any other questions? Or? All right. Fantastic. We will be moving. My report is actually pretty nil. We'll talk about it during the election. Let's go to business of the day. I know a little delayed, but we have our lovely guest here from IRP, William Thoreau. So I'll let you go ahead and give your spiel. I just want to preface this discussion by saying this presentation and the discussion that follows is only for the results of the survey. If you get what I'm saying, we are only talking about the results of the survey. So what was there? So we want to talk about process. We are not going to bombard you with that conversation at this point in time. We will talk about that at another date. Okay.
Good. Because I'm nameless, not the designer. So.
Yeah.
My name is William Searle. Can everybody hear me? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. If I start mumbling, which happens sometimes, just speak up and let me know. Here today to talk about, as you mentioned, the employee survey results. I'll be somewhat tethered here because the clickers aren't working, so I need to be next. Just a quick overview of what I plan to talk about, just a quick overview of the administration of the survey, the timeline, the structure of the survey, who responded, the reporting that happened, then we'll dig into the results a little bit, and if at any point you have questions, please stop me. You don't have to wait to the end to do questions. This is all for your benefit. So the survey was administered by the Survey Research Institute here at Cornell. My office uses them quite a bit for the surveys that we administer here on campus. So they do the programming and everything for us. This survey was available both online and in paper form. And we sent out an advance email from President Rawlings on October 5th. Then the survey went live the following day, October 6th. At that time, we also sent out paper surveys to a subset of employees who were identified by some HR reps, perhaps unlikely to have access to or opportunity to respond online. So to help give everybody a voice, we did send out paper surveys to some folks straight away. And then later on in the process, after sending out some email reminders, if we still hadn't heard from people, we sent them paper copies too, just in case they were having issues with email or otherwise accessing the online instrument. The people who were invited was basically everybody who wasn't invited to complete the academic workplace survey. So that included library, union, and non-academic staff, provided that they were benefits eligible, and had been here since July 1st. So we wanted people to have some time here, so you've been working here for a week. We didn't want you to judge the place too. The survey had six sections. Talked about your job, career development, respect and fairness, leadership and direction, life outside the university, and then some about you questions. There were 62 multiple choice questions for folks to tackle, and took people on average for the online survey about 10 minutes to complete the survey, so not very burdensome. We had one open-ended item at the end of the survey that basically was just a catch-all. If you have anything else to say, here's your chance. And that's a snapshot of what the online looks like. About 68% of employees responded to the survey, which is comparable to what we had in 2011 when the employee survey was last administered. You can see the breakdown of paper and online responses. We did have some duplicates that we had to sort out where people did the online survey and then they also did a paper survey. So we had to weed those people out so they don't get too bored. And then about 1,100, almost 1,200 people did choose to supply open-ended comments at the end of the survey. But some of those people, it was a one-word comment. The results have been published online. They're publicly available. The URL listed there, or you can just search the Cornell website and you can have any trouble finding it. You can also see last administration's results from 2011. You're interested, although we also offered up some comparisons and analysis that we provide here online. And if you're really curious, you can see all our other surveys on this website as well. We provided results at the college or unit level to the applicable leadership. And this is an example of sort of what that looked like, at least the initial part of it. So each leader was able to see the results for their unit. That's the first column here if we're starting left to right. So they're able to see their results for the most recent administration as well as the results for 2011 for their particular unit. The center column that's green or red just shows the change from 2011 to 2016. And then in the two rightmost columns, they were able to see some context here what it looked like for the university. So now we'll just sort of start going through the results. There's nothing, I'm not going to be showing you anything new that isn't already online, so I apologize if you've already pored over the stuff that's online and this is a recent question, but it'll be good learning opportunity. So the first item on the survey and really the overall measure from the survey is how satisfied are you with your job at Cornell? And here we're looking at the responses to that, the percent of employees who responded either somewhat satisfied or very satisfied with their job here. So light blue represents somewhat satisfied, dark blue, very satisfied. You can see the results there. The top row is showing us the 2016 employee survey. And then to put it in context, there's the 2011 employee survey and then the most recent academic work life survey. You can see they're very similar. Not that much has changed in the last 5 years, and there's not much difference between the two populations. All right. Sorry, we're going to be looking at a lot of these ones with pie charts. Now we dive into some agree-disagree questions, and this was a bank of items that asked about your job. I apologize, some of the wording is truncated a bit just to accommodate the space here. If you're interested in the full actual question wording, you can see the instrument online. I also have it available with me, so I can read it to you. These things are sorted in descending order from the percent who responded most strongly agree or agree. And you can see for yourself that my work is interesting and I do work beyond what is expected in my job, top of the list there. Not so many people eager to agree that I have enough time to do high quality work and that workloads are distributed fairly. This is an example, another example of how we display the results online. This is showing the same items from the previous slide and it's just pulled in data from 2011 and what we've done here is just aggregate the people who said agree or strongly agree. So So it's a rougher measure, but it's easier to compare with 2011. And you can see the gap between 2011 and 2016 here. So a negative number says it went down since 2011. I show you this not because we have time to walk through every one of these, but to let you know that they are available online and to let you know this is sort of indicative of what the survey overall looks like, and that things haven't really changed much, and if they have, it's a slight decline. This is a new question in 2016, which is trying to get at the idea of red tape and that getting in the way of people doing their job. Here, just to be clear, the responses shown are not at all or a little. So in theory, one would want that to be a lot of people who say that red tape doesn't get in the way of doing their job. So if that's what it is. Career development. Again, performance reviews being conducted regularly, at least to me, wasn't surprising to see that at the top of the list of people agreeing with that. Supervisors supporting professional development also there at the top. And then at the other end of the spectrum, just over a third of employee respondents said that they were satisfied with opportunities for promotion. Just over 40% of employees said that they can provide feedback about their supervisor's performance, which is up from 35% in 2011. So that was sort of the biggest mover among these items. Moved up about 6 percentage points. Next is about respect and fairness. My supervisor treats me with respect is at the top of the list. There's a pattern across the survey in which when asked about their supervisor relative to, say, university leadership overall, the supervisor is going to be rated higher than them. So that the farther removed you are from an employee, the lower their opinion of you. So you'll see supervisor tend to be at the top. And then you see something like Cornell recognizes contributions of staff towards the bottom. These results really haven't shifted too much since 2011. The biggest move is being treated fairly without regard to gender, race, ethnicity, et cetera. That declined slightly from 86% in 2011 to 82% here in 2016. Leadership and direction. I found this one to be interesting, personally, in analyzing the data. Here again, we can see sort of the distance you are from an employee reflecting what the employee has to say about you. I trust communications from my supervisor. You can see that is much higher than, say, trusting communications from your unit leadership. At the bottom, you can see that employees were least likely to agree with the statement, the employee assembly represents my interest. We can't put that into context because it was new this year. We didn't ask it in 2011. So the only way we can judge it is relative to other things on this survey. There were a lot of things that shifted here compared to the 2011 results. So the biggest movers were Cornell is moving in a positive direction. University leadership has a clear vision for the future of the university. People report hearing more about university plans via rumors instead of official channels. And the biggest shift was in having a clear understanding of the goals and objectives of the university. That declined from 50% in 2011 to 39% in 2016. So each of those four things that I mentioned were all declining since 2011. This was a hot topic in 2011 when we surveyed staff, was asking about organizational changes. There was a lot of that happening. We asked it again with slightly different wording in 2016 how people felt about organizational changes and transitions at the institution. Not many people see positive outcomes from those. Here's a quick story here. less than 30% say that these changes have had a positive impact on their work. Less than 20% say that the changes will have the university spend money wisely. It's also hard to know how to take these results, in part because many more people said not applicable in 2016 because they didn't experience the changes, is my interpretation of the data. So the percentages are a little misleading if you're comparing to 2011, just something to keep in mind. Employees were asked about sources of stress. The most common form of stress identified by employees was personal finances or debt. Concern about the security of your job at Cornell has declined noticeably since 2011. It was 54% in 2011, and now we're down to 44%. So that's a step in the right direction. Child care, only a concern for about 1 in 5 employees, although imagine that would be different for different age groups. I'm concerned, for example. And sort of getting toward the end of things here. Oh, yeah, last turn. These questions get at work-life balance, talk about how the extent to which the university or supervisor might be supporting that. Nearly three-quarters of people were agreeing that the university's benefits programs meet their needs and that their supervisor helps employees balance work and family. People, as you can see, least likely to say that the university helps do it. Again, that's the difference between this person you see regularly and this amorphous university. And the supervising helper, the supervisor helping staff balance work and family is up slightly from 69% to 73%. The rest on that previous slide are about the same as they were. Not much shifting. So that's a quick run through. Nobody's tapped me with questions, so here everybody's aware.
No, we're going to open up the speakers list. So first, Laura.
I'm just curious, we talk a lot about the aging workforce here, and under Life Outside the University, has people concerned about their own health, has that percentage changed since 2011?
Not substantially, maybe by 1 or 2 percentage points.
I know we don't have data for colleges or units, but could you speak to if they've seen kind of similar gains that we've seen general across the university? So if things got better across the university, they get better in all the colleges and units, or did you see the difference?
There's variation across units, as one would expect. You know, yeah, in the aggregate, the university looks about the same as it did in 2011. But individual units,
the same. No. Okay.
You know, some look very similar, but some experienced what one might interpret as positive change, and others less positive change.
I get some fairly direct feedback from a couple of my constituents that they would have liked to have seen more than 2 of the 5 response groups represented in their results. Is there a reason why it was only up to?
We will be putting comprehensive frequencies up there so you can see exactly the percent who responded every single thing. The reason we do this, which is not in any way unique to this survey, it's where we tend to display all of our survey results, is because it's visually easier to digest. If you're trying to compare 4 or 5 things at once, it's just challenging for the brain to do.
You had a question? Go ahead, Tim.
So you have the data disaggregated by college, but do you also look at differences across job categories, levels, and job families? Or
we have that potentially. It has not been done.
Maybe that might be a suggestion. I'm pretty sure we actually talked about that, Laura, so you brought that up initially when we were discussing this with Herman a while ago, but if we could break it down by job group and job family to see if there were some major themes that were coming out of particular areas,
yeah,
particular,
yeah,
so not just college and unit, but
yeah, because within the unit, yeah, between say union staff and non-union staff, yeah, yeah.
So I have a question about when we talk about overall satisfaction. So even just, I know the article is very positive, and it seems very positive, but I guess in thinking of a changing workforce and changing demographics, and look at the absolute value of the people who are saying somewhat dissatisfied to very dissatisfied, if we break that down by demographics, is there a suspicion that because I don't know what those demographics are, but is there a suspicion that that population might be the population that is going to grow in the workforce, who's already dissatisfied? So, I mean, you know, we hear a lot about, you know, women, people of color, a lot of underrepresented groups who continuously express dissatisfaction because of the way they're treated. I guess that went along to your question on fairness, being treated fairly.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Right. So, is that a concern that people think we should start addressing or thinking about, like that absolute value might actually grow substantially over the next 5 years because of population change?
I can't speak to it enough for thinking about that. No one's asked me to do that analysis.
So you all haven't broken this down by demographics yet? Yes, being a keyword.
Right. You can't.
It.
Okay. Will it be broken down that way, or is there a request that has to come?
Yeah, somebody has to ask me.
Gotcha.
Well, somebody has to ask my boss.
Wait a minute, don't come at me. Any other questions? Yeah.
Just a comment. I think that question is broken down in the academic work life survey by demographics, women and other demographics. So if people are interested in at least seeing how academics are responding, I think you can get that there.
Right. Final thought, Carrie, if you had anything, since now I can see you. Good.
Thank you.
Oh, Gina? Gina? I'm lying. Okay. All right, great. So if that's it, we have no more questions. I do appreciate you coming in. Oh, Gina, did you have a question?
No.
Okay. I just wanted to thank you again for coming out and giving these results. I know you were kind of thrown. Felt like you're probably going to be thrown to the wolves.
No, I'm happy to help. Yeah, I mean, you can fire whatever questions that you want. I can't answer the can. But if you do have follow-ups, and I apologize, it's really not very legible here, you're welcome to email me, WRS77.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. So I am going to go back to my report from the chair only because I just thought of something that actually just came in this morning that is going to happen. So at our May 17th meeting, President Pollock and Mary Offerman will be joined. So if I have ever implored and begged and pleaded with you all, for those who are not here, and I'll also be making this announcement over the listserv, it is really important that you attend that meeting, especially since this is an opportunity to discuss with new leadership. Tanya?
So just in there, I think that that's great, and I see many of the same faces sitting around the table, and just as we're thinking about going to our election, and maybe this is not the right time to talk about it, but there are many faces who have not been here very often, and are we thinking about asking them to relinquish their seats?
That can be a consideration, so as we just revised the charter and bylaws, we very specifically put in provisions that made that process clear. So should a member or the exec board decide that that is something that is worth taking on, then we can do that. We just would have to note that, let me be specific. So there are two processes. One, there's a process now that we put in place to unseat someone. So unseating means they are still a voting member of the assembly. They maintain their position. However, for the duration of until the assembly decides to reseat them, their absence does not count toward quorum, and they actually cannot participate in a vote. So they still have their position on the assembly. So let's say somebody was out on a medical leave, you know, for a couple months, and that was something that was brought up to us. We could unseat that number so that, you know, it wouldn't harm our quorum number, so we'd still be able to do business. That person just would not have any rights to vote until the assembly decided to reseat them as a member. So that's something that we got from the GPSA and the UA. That's a process that they put in place to make it make sense, that for the UA's sake, they couldn't proceed without them, because they could still do business, but couldn't necessarily proceed without a constituent group not being completely members. The second process would be if somebody is just not showing up, clearly has no interest in being on here, and has expressed that probably openly to somebody, we just would follow the procedure in the charter, I believe, the charter of the bylaws, to just remove that member from the assembly, period. And we would go through a process of filling an incidental vacancy after that, which is also outlined in the charter. So it's a possibility, but if it's a concern that people want to raise to the assembly or to the exec board, that's fine, we can do it. There are some folks who do email quite a bit of time in advance, who are actually out on vacation. So it's not, so, or at the last minute, you know, the folks who work in residence life, crises happen, and they're trying to deal with those. Not everybody is maliciously ignoring their meeting, but it is a concern for us.
Right.
Yeah.
I would ask that folks contact the exec board first.
Yeah.
I would like to make a recommendation. Thinking of the voices who would be represented by the folks who don't come to the table, the minutes don't associate names with the body like these charts and grids have been doing. I think it might be helpful. Imagine, I don't know, stick a flag over there. You're in that group. You're interested. You go to the website to see. You'd really have to do some digging to figure out who your representative is and whether they were present or not. But if in parentheses or something after, it would say Fitch and say Facilities and say Grove and say, it would help people associate whether their voice was present at the table or not.
Right, yeah, as opposed to having people like look at the minutes and then have to track back to the actual list of representatives,
yeah,
to figure out.
It might be a quick way to help people understand.
Yeah, let's see if we can do that with the minutes. For example, it's like, But yeah, Amanda's not here, but I think that's something we can do the emailing about to see if she can do that. So that being said, I'm going to conclude that very brief report and just again just ask that you all come to that meeting. Let's go on to talk about elections for the Employee Survey Oversight Committee on the same topic. So the reason we're not going to talk about process is because there was a process that was outlined. You all got my very long, detailed email about legislative history of that and kind of where things are at this point. So based on the resolution that Tanya put forward back a couple years ago that codified a lot of those processes, that's how the division Mary's division has been trying to proceed with that, the result. So what they've done is they are going back to the response from President Gordon and still appointing an oversight committee of which they've asked additional members to sit on from across the institution, most specifically within the division, but across the institution as well as a couple members from the EA. So that's what we need to, those are the seats we need, or the seat we need to elect, because I'm managing that apparently. So the charge of that committee is what I wrote in the email to you. That committee actually is not going to be the one tasked with responding to the specific needs. It is determining the process for the response to the survey results. So if there are things that came out today, like we need to, like it will be beneficial to break this down by job group. It'd be beneficial to get demographics down. That would be something that would come from that group to say this is what our subcommittees or working groups need in order to better or more specifically attack whatever the core areas of concern that they decide need to be addressed are. Does that make sense? All right. So
could you articulate again who else is on the committee?
I actually have a list, but it's mostly folks from, I saw HR Analytics, I saw Angela Winfield, the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion. I want to say, hold on, Mary. So Mary will be on it. Come on. Okay, so it is David Taylor, Denise Brown Hart, Kathy Berkren, Laura Sayer. I want to say this is Marge Ferguson, Mary Beth Jordan, Reginald White, Danny Dimitri, Melanie Ciattoli, Marin Clarkberg, and Angela Winfield, and myself. And Paul, it's co-chaired, I'm going to say it's co-chaired by Mary and Paul Streeter. So and the charge that she sent out was exactly what I sent to you all. So, that being said, I'm going to now open the floor for nominations for that seat. You are allowed to nominate yourself. You must nomination must happen. It must be seconded and is then accepted by the person who is being nominated. And then we will proceed with a secret ballot if it is contested. If it is not contested, we will just ask for unanimous consent. So, nominations for Employee Survey Oversight Committee.
I have a question before we open up nominations. You know, I sit on the Retirement Plan Oversight Committee with many of these same people. Would it be better to have different EA members on these different committees? Because I was interested in being on this committee, but, you know, David Taylor, Mary Hoffman, et cetera. I mean, you know, there's quite a bit of overlap there. I don't know whether that would be a reason why I shouldn't put my name on my hat already for this. Does anybody have any thoughts on that?
That's a good group for that.
I don't see any harm in having the same people sit on various committees. I mean, similar oversight.
Of course, we do. I was going to encourage people to participate and be active as long as they have the time and they're able. Great to see more folks participate in a lot of these committees that we have. But again,
I mean, my recommendation to you all would be this committee is exactly what you would have said, in that it's going to be more project managing it. If you actually want to do the work to like make proposal and recommendation for change, I would probably recommend not to be on that committee, because if you were on that committee, you are not able to do the other things. So, choice, that, you know, what your choice would be.
Very good point. So, I might have said this in the email, but I don't remember. This could, there will be working groups that will report to this, and those will be determined based on what they identify as the core areas of concern from the results of the survey. So, if you want, and they will include EA members. That was already made very clear. So, if you are interested in sitting on a working group very specifically, that's a different conversation. We just don't know what those are yet. All right, so again, floor for the question. Oh, open the floor for nominations then.
I would actually be really interested in participating in that committee.
So there's a nomination.
Background in surveys. So.
Oh, of course, that's right. Yeah. My advisor. Nomination for Tammy Shapiro to serve on the Employee Survey Oversight Committee. They're second.
Oh.
Well, third question is this. So it's been seconded. Do you accept?
I accept.
Of course you do. You nominated yourself. Are there any other nominations? There's only one seat available, by the way. All right, going once, going twice. Can't see Carrie. I did it on full screen. Took off. Carrie, did you? Nothing else? Okay. Oh, good. Okay. Sold. So because it is uncontested, we will not have to do a secret ballot. So congratulations to you, Mr. Shapiro. today, because they actually, I told them I'd give them back. Well, that wasn't on the agenda, so we have to do another time. And until that's commissioned, then we have to do that. Next is going to be the Transportation Task Force. So this was something that was communicated that you all passed last meeting. We all passed last meeting. Okay. Transportation has been alerted about it. Bridget said, great, they'll be sending us their folks soon. We need to elect, the way the language is constructed, that at least three members, I know there was a lot of interest, that at least three members are allowed to sit on this committee. It means there can be more if you want to. There actually is not a cap. But if you're interested, let us know. Additionally, one of those folks will need to serve as the chair. So we will first need to be elected to this, and then we'll need to elect it. Or actually, either way, it's up to you. We can elect the chair first, or you can do that. Would you prefer to elect the chair first?
I would like to ask a question. There was a date clearly articulated in the resolution. It's like May 2nd.
May 3rd is our meeting.
That remains?
Yes. It would be initial recommendations. So we're not saying that the work of that task force would be completely over and done.
It could be a project plan.
Exactly.
It could be the path moving forward. The reason why I put that date on there was because the EA will have a last meeting shortly after that. So if there was anything we need to move forward, I wanted to get that in there before the group changed over.
Exactly. And that would also help to determine, you know, what the legislative priorities are for the next assembly. All right. That being said, I'm going to open the floor for nominations for chair for that task force. So a member of the EA needs to chair that task force. Same process for nominations. And I know, hold on, there was one, four. Kathy Shields, I want to say, volunteered herself. Yes, she did. Yes, so Kathy Shields is nominating herself to sit on the, well, to sit on the committee, not to chair it. Although she did throw out your name too to nominate you. And Susan Wilcox for serving on the committee.
Aren't they nice people?
I mean, after all, you are on Transportation Hearing Board, right? Would you like to serve as chair of this task force? Would you like to be? You sure you don't want to be nominated?
University Assembly.
That's going to end.
Huh?
That's going to end.
Yeah, you can throw my name in there, I guess.
Woohoo!
I've got two benefactors right there.
Yeah, there you go. So we're nominating Kevin for chair of the task force.
Second.
I'm like, listen, I did negotiations. Don't try to
quote me. I got enough committees right now.
It's been seconded. Do you accept? Of course you do.
Thanks.
Good job. Any other nominations for chair? Looking at you, Kevin. Going once. Going twice. Sold. Uncontested. You're sold. Kevin Fish, congratulations. You're going to be chairing the Transportation Task Force.
Why, thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. All right, now we're going to open the floor for nominations for members. So if you would like to sit on the task force as a member, Kathy Shields is nominating herself. Is there a second? Well, hold on just a second. There's a second for Kathy Shields. I know she already accepted this. She wrote me a whole email about it. is there, and then others, Laura? Laura is also volunteering. Is there a second?
Second
and third. Look at you. That's two. And you accept, of course, that you nominate yourself. Any others? One more? At least one more seat?
Well, who else is in there? Sue Wilcox.
Sue Wilcox is on there, but she's on vacation. I don't want to volunteer her accepting. But it's not the end of the world. We can also appoint someone after the fact, but it's just making sure. So you all raised a lot of transportation issues over the fall and the course of the spring. So there we go. Oh, Christine.
I can respond to obligation.
You felt it. You felt it. Okay. Is there a
second?
Good. And you accept?
Yes.
Fantastic. So if there are no other nominations, I guess going once, going twice, and we are sold. So the three of you all will sit on this committee, praise, or the task force. Yes. Question.
And I also want to put out, we've got two employees who have already said that they want to be on the task force as well, so you've already got two other members.
Yes. And
so if you have their name, do you want me to give them?
Can you give those? Because I remember an email. I just don't remember.
Red LaCelle.
Oh, yes.
LaCelle and Joey Gates.
Red and Joey Gates. Great. Is there any dissent to these two individuals serving on this task force?
Joey's currently a member of the UA Campus Infrastructure Committee, so she's familiar with our work. And Ned was a former EA member and UA member.
Yep.
So two folks who I think would be great assets. If there's any need for plugs for them.
That would be great plug. And I see William State, so he must want to serve on that.
CIP liaison.
There we go. All right. So there being no dissent to these two individuals sitting serving on the committee, we will appoint these to the committee so we can get started. TTS. If other folks do come up, let us know, because again, the group is not capital. We do want to make sure that we get things moving. And transportation, Bridget will be sending the names of the folks that she would like from her area to join there. But I'll connect all of you via email so everybody is set and told and can go forward. All right? Y'all good with that? Fantastic. So quiet in Coleto today. Is it the rain? I don't know what's going on. Maybe we need to insert some contentious in here. I don't know. All right. So the last item on our agenda today is to just talk about the elections, and that's really just to go over what is happening. So once we passed the charter changes last week, last meeting, we had to beg on bended knee Hunter Rawlings before he dipped out of his office, and actually he was already gone, and his office was being redone, but to he and council's office to review the changes to our charter and approve them in time for us to do the election. Thankfully, that was done. There were a couple things in terms of our charter that were not accepted, not because they didn't agree with them, but just timing. So he didn't have time to circle back with the provost about reviewing the academic calendar. Now, that was not accepted, but they said just resubmitted and we should be fine. Just wanted to clear it with Mike Kopikoff first. They wanted to clarify intent around some of the areas, but other than that, they actually accepted it. The only things that were not accepted were, in terms of our seats, were Cornell Tech, because Cornell Tech has not been written to the bylaws of the university yet. So until that happens, in the same way that it is that the Geneva campus is written in, until that happens, we can't actually represent them. So that was not accepted. The retirees seat, there was a question of the intent of how that was going to be elected. Mm-hmm. Just so everyone's clear, since that list, that data set is maintained separately, so those retirees are not part of the staff population unless they are temporary employees. That's maintained by WorkLife, so Linda Crow Howell, Michelle Arterby, their area, and the Cornell Retiree Association. So they actually are caucusing to appoint their members, which they have already done. They've selected their basically the same way the faculty senate does. It's one seat, but it's two people who are rotating because of time constraints for them or constraints for them. So that part is already done. Everything else, the other seats, are still up. So what's up for election right now are the college seats that have been vacated at this point in time. So that's arts and sciences. And all those others, because I can't remember off the top of my head, but you got it in your elections material. So the college seats and the disability rep. So those are the seats that are open and available at this point in time. What was decided today that some of you walked in on during our exec meeting was, based on the applications that we've gotten or the interest that we've gotten, one of those seats is contested as arts and sciences. The other seats are no. So there was a question of whether or not we should if we should hold the election as it is with a contested election only for arts and sciences, and the others would be default selections because the entire staff population votes on them, or if we should offer the same way kind of what happened last round when the EA first did its restructure, if we should offer those folks an alternative open seat and then not hold an election. So the vote by exec was to go forward and hold the election as it is, since people have already committed to that. There is a caveat in our charter. One of the revisions that was made was that if a seat goes unfilled, it is up to the assembly to decide whether or not they want to seat the person or the folks who did not win in an open seat. We can choose to do that or not. But right now, you know, per Carrie, you know, Carrie's thoughts that she put out, really want to, you know, maintain integrity of the election since people already applied to be in those seats, kind of boost the profile of the assembly since we actually, as it was pointed out, we have not had an election. Actually, Gina said since she got here, there has not been the EA election per se. People have just kind of rolled in the seats. So welcome to the first actual election of the EA. It will be up to the assembly after this, which many of you will be a part of, whether or not you want to hold an election in the fall to fill the seats that were that nobody ran for to go around. And so, and Carrie, do you remember what the seats were that folks didn't run for off the top of your head? Because I don't.
Hotel, ILR, and the disability representative.
So out of the 7 seats that are open, 3 of them are not going to be filled, which I think is pretty good, actually. So good for us. We're only missing 3 folks. Gina, I think you're muted. You muted yourself, Gina.
Oh, I muted her. Hold on.
Hi.
There you go.
We didn't get the signed petition form for the IPP candidate, so not sure where that stands.
Oh, I thought you said somebody didn't you send an email this
week? That was the computer science individual who.
Oh, the engineering person.
Yeah.
Engineering computer information. Oh, sorry. Never mind.
Did reach out. Pam did reach out to make sure that everybody knew about the deadlines. One of the arts and sciences candidates did come over and dropped off his petition form and got his photo taken, but we did not hear anything from the IPP candidate.
Robbie, no problem.
Since I work in IPP, if you'd like me to reach out to that person, let me know what the contact information is after this. I'll go and chase them down and find out whether they're still interested.
Up to you, Gina, would you think that's appropriate or would you guys think it's worth it?
I do. I think it's the bend of the rules, but I think the application of the rules here is engagement. So we've already got somebody and who seems interested and there's a viable seat. So I would suggest, if you wouldn't mind doing that, Rob, that'd be great.
All right. So
it was fun.
I can give it to
okay.
I have it.
I'm going to give it to you. We can make that happen. So that's where the seats stand, and the election will happen next week, Gina? Oh, this Friday, I'm sorry. It'll happen Friday and then run through. What was the date? What were the dates?
I think it's Monday and Tuesday.
You're right. Monday and Tuesday will be election. So
Monday, Tuesday. Yeah, Monday, Tuesday. It ends on Wednesday at noon. So it's 8 a.m. Monday morning through noon on Wednesday.
The 26th, correct. Yeah. Perfect. So that's the election period. You all should be aware, and I've penciled this in now, that Friday, correct, the 28th, time to be determined, but I'm sure it will probably be at this same time, will location probably to be determined, will need to be the organizational meeting for next year's assembly. So at that meeting, you will need to elect your chair, your entire exec board. So remember that the exec board changed slightly with the bylaw changes. So it'll be the chair, the executive vice chair, the vice chair of operations, and then the parliamentarian will be your fourth seat. So remember the finance role was rolled into the vice chair of operations to make it a little easier for folks. Those would be the 4 seats you would need to elect. In addition, you'll need to elect your, or appoint your members to the university assembly.
What day?
The 28th, is that Friday? The Friday. Yes. So next week?
Friday.
I was like, y'all don't throw me off now. So we went back and forth on the calendar for a while. So because the voting ended on the 26th, it was a little too difficult to, I think, swing. I think folks felt like there wasn't enough notice. So that's why we're trying to, I know it's an off day instead of a
week. I can't be there.
Can't be there.
The reasoning for it.
Well, I understand it. I just have something that they
representation on the university assembly. We need to get our members into the university assembly so that they have an opportunity to represent us on the university side. So it's really tight constraints.
Okay. Those are due May 1st. So there's that. But I only get to act as chair for until a new chair is elected. So I'm not opposed to entertaining a different way to vote if that makes sense. But and Gina, I don't know if we can since the calendar, but
you're chair until June 1st.
Yes. Yeah. So, but I mean, once a new chair is elected for that new assembly, I get to move and let the new chair run the new assembly meeting. I'll still run this one, but but they get to do the elections for the remainder of that meeting. I'm just a temporary chair.
Temporary.
Yeah. Temporary.
Unless you're
like, let's sit down now. If I'm sure you all, not me. So there's that. So are there questions about that? We'll get a final notice out for the date and try to get that in. And if you can't make it, we'll try to figure out a way to make sure you're still actively engaged in at least the voting process and such, and we know what goes on. So if there's a way for us to solicit nominations, we'll have to talk about that. But I just wanted folks at least to know that that's what's on the calendar, and that's how this fell because of the very, very short timeline. And I appreciate the office and Carrie and everybody for being very flexible and going back and forth and really trying to get this done. But because of our obligations to the UA, we did not want to have a repeat of last year, which is interesting. So
I have a process question. Mm-hmm. What if, say, Michelle or Tanya wish to put themselves out there and be nominated as chair or one of the exec committee or the UA rep or whatever it might be? Do we have a mechanism in place whereby they can nominate themselves?
So that
they can't be at that meeting so that we would have the option of voting on them?
Yep.
I also, you know, would rather know in advance if people are willing to consider some of these positions, because if we're sitting at the meeting and nobody wants to be chair, we say, let's have Michelle be chair.
Yeah.
You know, she's not here, she can't say no. You know, I mean, that's not necessarily fair either.
Right.
But
I think what I've seen on, at least I can tell you what has happened on the essay before back in the day, and I don't think would be totally untrue to this assembly, is that they have actually solicited nominations for their exec board and for other positions prior to their organizational meeting. And folks can't make, they actually write out statements prior to that. And there have been folks who have gone so far to say, I want to run for chair. If in the event that I am not elected to chair, I would also like to be considered for vice chair of operations. And so they've also prepared a statement for that. I don't think that's unreasonable for people to do, especially, again, considering that the meeting is on an off day for folks and there's not really that much notice. I think it's perfectly fair to solicit that. I think we can talk about that. Exec, I guess.
Okay. What about votes? Again, I mean, if
they'd be vote by proxy. We could
they
actually,
can send in their proxy.
We can do vote by proxy. We can actually, if this is something that people would like to do, we can say that we can set the process up. We can talk about this, and I can solicit if people would like to do this via email. If we can solicit nominations for the position prior to and present a slate of nominations for people to see and consider via email, so you'll see who all is up, and then you can, if you can't make it to the meeting, you can send in your proxy votes for those positions prior to that meeting.
I think considering this is an off-schedule meeting and it's relatively short notice, that would be a fair way to do it.
Okay. So I can send that out via email and description, and then you all get back to me with, say, nope, that doesn't make sense, or let's try it this way instead, and then we can decide on that process and then go from there.
The other thing maybe we should throw out is, I mean, I don't know if the 28th has to be today, but we can look at the new time on the 1st or the new time on the 27th and do a doodle to the group. I mean, I don't know if we're the only two people in the situation. There's a lot of faces missing around the table, so I don't know who else.
I honestly don't either, but we can ask. But it was also, we needed a way to convey to people who were running for the position what day they needed to be expected to show up and participate in their organizational meeting. Because, I mean, there people aren't, yeah. So that will be the only trouble.
Gina's reading her
name. Oh, Gina, go ahead, sorry.
The 28th was specific and intentional because it needed to be done before the UA meeting on the 2nd, but there could also be an opportunity to convene on either the Monday or Tuesday at noon. If either of those, I mean, this was understanding that Friday was going to be tough. The objective was to make sure that the meeting was held before the UA meeting at 1, so I would just, if there's the will of the body is one of the other opportunities. There was nothing set in stone about the Friday other than it was, we didn't want to get too far close to the meeting in case there were some issues.
Right. So if people find it more appropriate to do a doodle poll and see which date works best, then we can do that between Friday versus Monday. Yeah. Or to Tuesday, sorry. Those three dates.
Right.
And we can go from there. All right, sound good? Fantastic.
And if you do intend to nominate somebody, it really is a good idea to reach out and ask them.
Yeah.
just throwing that out there because it's happened before.
Yeah, and ask folks who are in positions now what it's like, what the obligations are, how busy are you, what's the time commitment, just so you get a good idea of what's expected, and then you can move forward from there. So if there's nothing else for the good of the body. We have exhausted our
So Beth McKinney is a member of the CH community as well as student campus life. She asked, there's two announcements. The first is about CARE fundraising. The CARE fundraising community needs more volunteers. Can the EAA help spread the word? We are using all avenues available to share this message. CARE funds needs volunteers. We're a small group of committed employees working to make sure the CARE fund stays funded. The fund offers financial assistance to faculty and staff who experience financial hardship due to unforeseen or unavoidable events. Our projects include planning and marketing to solicit employee donations through events such as auctions and concerts. We meet 6 to 8 times per year as necessary. For more information, you can contact Beth and help pass the word if possible. The second is that we need an EA volunteer. CARE Fund needs a EA volunteer to represent the CARE Fund Applications Committee. Most recently, Linda Roby, was the person. She is still on the CARE Applications Committee, but no longer on the EAA. Is there an EAA member who wishes to join? That person will also bring info and updates back to the EAA.
So you need both a person to sit on the CARE Fund Committee and for us to distribute, I'm looking at you, Carrie, to distribute information about it. Is that correct?
I responded to an email, but I can send it directly. I kind of got an email, whatever you call it, wormhole. But I responded to the agenda saying, here are some announcements. So I don't know where that email goes.
It should have come to me, but I just searched my email and I don't have anything from you.
Okay, so I can send what I've sent directly to you so that you can check.
That would be great.
And if you could send me that note from Beth, that would be great.
Can you forward it to
me? Yeah, I'll take care of it.
Yeah.
You can get it.
And so Carrie can get that, and then we can include all of this in our next communication with them.
Yeah, Tanya, I meant to get back in the loop, loop you back in because we decided to do last week's mailing as election specific, and so I'm going to do a separate sort of more newslettery mailing that's going to include the award information. So I think the CARE Fund, call for volunteers would be good there too.
Okay. Do you know when that's going to go out?
Not yet.
Okay. Only because we set a deadline for May.
Yeah.
It'll be
fine.
Okay.
I'm going to try and pull things together this week. I'm sort of just coming off my election, pounding the pavement to get people to sign up. So.
Gotcha.
All right.
Then thank you for all of that. So the only final thing about elections that I neglected to mention, but that applies to 6 of you in here, who may or may not be in here, actually. So given the way the elections were done, if you do recall from the restructure last year, everybody started their terms at the exact same time. So everybody was elected to essentially a 2-year term, which means everybody was going to expire in 2018, which is not how we're supposed to do it. Half of us are supposed to be staggered so that there is continuity. So those folks there are 6 people whose terms are extended until 2019, so that essentially you are coming in with this cohort who's just now being elected. So it will look like one cohort of staggered terms and the other cohort will expire still in 2018. Those seats that are going to be extended are the Geneva campus, human resources representative, library, museum, and continuing education, international representative. Ooh, I don't know how LGBT ended up on there, but LGBT, and then the women's representative. So those are the seats that are extended until 2019. So that's there. If you go in the elections committee folder and box, you can see the chart. So you see completely who's there. Ignore the Cornell Tech campus seat because it doesn't exist. But that's what that breakdown is. This doesn't make sense.
I thought I previously heard that the veterans rep was extended as well. Is that not the case anymore?
It wasn't. I think it was in the initial draft that BJ put forward, but that was before we changed the seats.
Okay.
And so once the seats changed, it literally I just went every other person in the block.
So
like, just to make it, I was, there was no method to the madness. It really was. The policies were already vacant, so I didn't have to do anything with them. So it was just the other two columns of staff units and affinity seats. That's how we went down.
Okay.
So, anything else for the good of the group? Or, yep.
I just want to share that I'm working on a large campus project on performance management at the university and how it relates to recognition rewards for employees. And we'll be putting together focus groups. We've identified the EA as one of our focus groups that we'd like to talk to. So some of you may or may not, just by luck of the draw, get a random survey. But you will, but you may hear of other colleagues who get a random survey at some point in the next couple weeks. It's not going to everybody. But once we get the results of that, we'll be coming to the EA along with some other groups to talk about what we found to get your results, looking at our annual performance dialogue, maybe changing that to more frequent opportunities to have feedback and conversations and stuff.
Sounds good. All right. Seeing that we've expired, I'm going to move to adjourn this meeting.
Second.
Second is no discussion. I don't care. Bye.
Just an additional note, folks. I am working on a logical restructure for the box file. So if you're having trouble finding something, just give me an email and I'll let you know what happens.
Driving back to the field.
Bye, Carrie. But take care, Carrie.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.